Hi there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the A Minute to Midnight Show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand, and where it's now autumn, and it's hit very hard here where I am. In the first few days, it's like, whoa, summer's gone very quickly. Maybe we'll get some back. But with me, I have today on the show Alex Newman. It's the first time for a little while Alex has been on the show, and you're in Florida, Alex, but you've just told me off air that you've moved to a different part of Florida from where you were, and you're out of the city, I believe.
Yes, sir. Great to be here. Thank you for having me, Tony. It's great to see you, and praise the Lord. I finally got my family moved out to our little farm, and so I get to wake up in the morning and watch my cows grazing, and that's fantastic. So we're very grateful to God for the opportunity to be out a little closer to nature.
Absolutely. I mean, I love that too. I live I've got sheep and various things outside my windows as well, and the cows across the road. So yeah, I know it, love it. So yeah. And whilst it's nice and peaceful in the country, it's not so peaceful in other parts of the world right now, with now the situation with Iran and the whole Middle East, you know, potentially being engulfed in war. And people have different opinions on it, but one thing you can't ignore is that it's very significant.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to agree with the Donald Trump from 2011 to 2025 that starting a war with Iran would be a very bad idea. But it has started, without congressional permission. And I don't know exactly how the New Zealand system works, but in the United States, we have a constitution. Article 1, Section 8 outlines the power of Congress. And clearly listed among those powers is the power to declare war, which by definition, if it's a power of Congress, is not a power of the president. So, you and I both know, Tony, that the Iranian dictatorship is a very nasty group of individuals who have been exporting terrorism, murdering innocent people, abusing women and this entire country, attacking American soldiers around the world, right? Which is one of the points that Donald Trump and Secretary of War Pete Hegseth have made, that the Iranians have already been at war with us for many years. The U.S. is just now finally responding. But be that as it may, I think the warnings that Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth and J.D. Vance and Charlie Kirk and so many others gave over a period of many years about the possible implications of this conflict should be heeded. I would very much like to see this wrap up as quickly as possible because, as the president himself pointed out many times, we cannot afford another quagmire in the Middle East like Iraq or Afghanistan. And as I keep reminding people, you know, if you ever feel useless, just remember it took the U.S. government 20 years, trillions of dollars, thousands of American lives to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. So I know a lot of people are getting all enthusiastic about this, but we're already starting to see some of the results. We just had a suicide operative in Texas shoot up a nightclub, killed a couple of people. And I suspect we may see more. And I keep reminding people the Iranian regime, they're very unsavory, they're very nasty, they're very dictatorial, but they've got friends in high places. They are closely allied with the regime in Beijing. They are closely allied with the regime in Moscow. And I think this could become something much bigger if we're not careful.
I agree. And I think the whole thing is you can't assassinate a direct supposed descendant of Muhammad without it enraging the Shiites all over the world. And so it's not just Iran, and Iran's massive in itself, but yeah, you could have sleeper cells all over the world come to light in the next, well, might be over the next couple of years even, different retaliatory things and so on. You've got Iran with a ton of drones they can keep launching, which cost megabucks to shoot out of the sky, much more than it costs for them to make drones and things. And then you've got the media always talking about, oh, how many Iraqis are celebrating, I mean, not Iraqis, Iranians are celebrating the death of the Ayatollah. And yet you look at the mourning, the sheer number of people in mourning in Iran over it. So Iran is very divided over whether they support or don't support that regime as well. And if you look at every other country that the US has gone in and done this to, what's been the result? Has it been any better? No, not really. And so I think Iran's a whole bigger proposition than any of the other ones they've targeted. And it's like, oh, anyway. Yeah. And just aside from that, you have Israel and the US assassinating leaders of another country like that. And if it was any the other way around, imagine the outcry if some other regime had shot Netanyahu or killed Donald Trump or Keir Starmer from Britain or somewhere else, the outcry around the globe would be just something else. But because it's Iran, it's like, oh, no, you can do that. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very concerning, and I think there's a risk here that these types of tactics become normalized, that it just becomes normal, that assassination is now a tool of statecraft. And, you know, it's been going on for a very long time, but typically it was hidden, it was secret, nobody like bragged, like, hey, we just killed the foreign head of state. Like, and so we're entering a new era of geopolitics, and I suspect it's not going to go well. And to your point, you know, you mentioned the disaster that has come from previous U.S. interventions. I actually did an article for the New American Magazine, I believe it was in 2012, called Christian Massacres, the Fruit of U.S. Foreign Policy. And what I did was just I looked at all these different countries where the U.S. government, where the U.S. military, where NATO had intervened. And the common denominator between all of them was that the Christian population of these countries, of these regions, was being absolutely decimated in the wake of U.S. intervention. Whether it was Iraq, where you know, there was something like 3 million Christians there who had survived there for 2,000 years through every kind of terrible dictator, war, you know, Islam, whatever. And now suddenly they're all but gone, right? They're down to a few hundred thousand. A lot of them fled to Syria, where Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton helped build up this monstrosity called ISIS, started persecuting them there. Now they're being exterminated in Syria, and they have been now for years. We looked at the Ivory Coast. We looked at Egypt. We looked at Pakistan. We looked at Afghanistan. And everywhere the U.S. military intervenes, it always seems to be a disaster for Christians. So I would urge people to be in prayer for everybody, but especially the Christian communities of these countries. And of course, we need to be in prayer for our leaders, as the Bible commands us, that they would make wise and godly decisions. But I do think that there's a real risk that this goes the wrong way. And the reality is, Tony, and almost everybody should know this by now, the United States is not what it was even 10, 15, 20 years ago. We're $40 trillion in debt. We've got $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities. Our military has been absolutely decimated by decades of war and foreign occupation and corruption. And we've given all the secrets to the communist Chinese. Like, this is not the United States of 1980s, right? And so I think Americans would be wise to think and pray about this carefully before letting it spiral out of control.
Well, I can't see how they can extricate themselves out of it in a way now. They've committed themselves to something, and the Iranian regime doesn't look like it's just going to roll over and play dead either. So I don't know. It doesn't look like it's going to be anything short to me.
No, I agree. And we see now the missiles raining down on Bahrain, and we see missiles raining down on the UAE and in Qatar, and of course, missiles raining down on Israel. I just don't see this going well. So
no, and it could even end up with war between the two factions of Islam, between the Sunnis and the Shiites as well. So I don't know. It looks like very much like Bible prophecy of end times, with nation rising against nation and the whole thing kind of increasing to me. So yeah. Now, another thing, I suppose we could go on forever on that subject, but another thing you mentioned to me off air was the climate summit that you went to and things like that. So maybe we could go to that a little bit as well.
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Tony. So yeah, I was down in the Amazon rainforest a few months ago for the New American covering the UN climate summit. And this got almost no attention in the United States other than the work that we did. For those who are watching us and not listening, I want to show you an image. This is literally the official guardian spirit of the COP30. It was donated by the Chinese Communist Party. And for those of you who can watch and who can see this, they said it was a fusion of the Chinese dragon spirit and the Brazilian jaguar spirit coming together to become the guardian spirit of the COP30. So it's this demon-like creature holding the world in its hands with the little doves flying off in all directions, scattering. And I couldn't have come up with a more perfect symbol to illustrate the spiritual reality of what's happening here. I mean, we know the whole thing is based on lies. And of course, we know who the father of lies is. But One of the things that most jumped out at me throughout this summit, Tony, was the repaganization of the world with the full endorsement of pretty much the entire leadership of what we used to call Christendom. And I've seen this going on. You know, we've talked about it before, Tony, in Egypt. They came out with the new Ten Commandments at the top of Mount Sinai. And in 2012 in Cancun, they opened with a prayer to the Mayan goddess of cannibalism and war and human sacrifice. So, you know, it's not like a new thing, but I've never seen it this blatant. And I think that was actually one of the reasons they held it in the Amazon rainforest. That if you talk to these people, they have a little pet theory that they've glommed onto. And this was first articulated before the global warming hoax even became a thing. Back in the 1960s, Professor Lynn White of UCLA, Stanford, can't remember if it was Princeton or Yale, argued that the reason the world was facing an ecological crisis was because of Christianity, was because basically the Christian view of man and nature dominated people's thinking, even in, you know, non-Christian countries now, because of Christian missionaries and Western exports and technology and things. And the heart of that is that, you know, if you go back to Genesis, that God made man in his image. And so there's something special about us. You know, we're higher than the cockroaches and the lizards and the piranhas or whatever. And also that God made Adam in charge of the garden, of nature, of the trees, of the animals, that he basically put us at the top of the food chain, so to speak. Of course, there wasn't a food chain prior to the fall, but basically humans were the top dogs on this planet. And according to Lynn White, that was the reason that the planet was being destroyed. And so the solution then was to go back to the ancient pagan wisdom of, you know, the pagans who understood that, you know, we're just a part of nature and you know, the cockroaches have rights and Mother Nature has rights and things like this. And of course, you guys in New Zealand are familiar with that. I saw your own government was arguing that this river supposedly had human rights, which is especially ironic when you consider that unborn babies don't have human rights, but now rivers do. But this is like, this was being celebrated. I mean, they brought in all these pagans from the jungle and, they did prayers to the forest spirits and the river deities and, with world leaders present, like fully endorsing this. And you had all the religions of the world coming together, uniting behind this. So we're watching now in real time, the re-paganization of the world under the guise of saving the planet from climate change.
That is pretty crazy, but you're right. It is pretty obvious that, you know, that whole pagan thing has become so accepted in the West, you know, where it used to be pretty fringe. It's now part of general society and even governments. And the United Nations, of course, has been pretty instrumental in this for a long time. When you go back to the roots of the UN and the New Age movement and things like that, but it's becoming more and more mainstream.
That's right. That's right. And it is dominant when you go to, for example, the UN climate summits. Now, I don't know how it was in New Zealand, but I can tell you here in the United States, there was virtually no coverage at all. What me and my team from the New American did probably got 10 times more coverage than all of the American media down there combined, without exaggeration. So we were grateful for that opportunity to share with Americans what was going on here. But one of the reasons why I didn't get any coverage in the United States was because Donald Trump didn't even send any representatives. So the State Department told us that the point of this conference is to bankrupt the United States, so we're not sending anybody. And as we were talking to people down there, including senior people, they're like, this is great that Trump didn't send anybody. Because like, and they said this openly, we're going to come up with a really hard agreement. We're going to pass it by consensus because Trump didn't send anybody down here who could stop us. And then when Trump is gone in 3 years, we'll just go right back to implementing it. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, showed up and said, you know, Trump is an invasive species. Don't worry about him. He's not a permanent feature of American politics. So you guys do your thing. And as soon as I'm president, he didn't say that, but he implied it. We'll be right back to the table and, you know, we'll be fully on board. And by the way, most of our big states are on board. Our big companies are on board. So, you know, proceed as if we were here and we'll be right back. Now, that was kind of, they were really proud of this. You had some of them openly saying on stage, like, we're so glad the Americans aren't here because now we can do our thing without getting in trouble. But when we got back, Trump kind of pulled some Trump cards, if you will. He ended up putting out an executive order in January, getting us out of 66 international organizations, including the UN, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is their pseudoscience body, and also the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is the underlying mechanism that all these UN climate summits are built on. So we'll see where it goes from here. I think what Trump did was exactly what I would have done if I were president of the United States on the climate issue. But the Democrats have made very clear that this is not going away. We're not really backing out. It's just a temporary thing. And as almost anybody at this conference would tell you, even if the Americans don't believe us, and they don't, we've got their kids, right? We're brainwashing their kids in public schools all day. It's part of the international standardized assessments now. Like, you can't run from this. Maybe we don't have the older adults, but we've got the next generation. And so given enough time, this will be the pretext for one world politics, one world economy, and one world ultimately religious system. And we're watching that coming into view, even with Trump saying we're not going to participate.
That is interesting. So in New Zealand here, at the moment, we have a coalition government of three parties, a National Party, which is the bigger of them. And then we have ACT Party and New Zealand First in coalition. Well, the New Zealand First leader, Winston Peters, has been coming out hammering the UN as well, saying it's a useless body, basically. What have they done? And the WHO and all that. Let's rethink this. Should we even be involved with these people and all and whatever? And of course, that's quite popular with a lot of people here that don't like the UN and so on. But, you know, the New Zealand First Party has a habit of going with whichever other parties just to make sure they get in power. We've seen them go both ways. They went with Jacinda Ardern's party way back there when we had COVID, and they were instrumental in all of that too. So it could just be Hegelian dialectic and bluster in some ways. I think I just don't think the direction the world is going is going to change. And I think there's an awful lot of politicians that put on a cloak suitable for the moment, while the same people are paying them probably from above, you know, the big puppets masters. And unfortunately, I don't have a lot of faith in politicians and politics anywhere in any country to change the direction that things are ultimately going. And as you know, I've told you before, I feel the same way about Donald Trump. I feel like he's just another puppet being used to pursue an agenda in a way that's different than Biden was. But Biden was another puppet too, and Obama. And that's how I just see this whole thing. So I don't see governments as a whole pulling us out of this general direction that we're going in. But you mentioned something else, and that is how they're educating the next generation, the children, and indoctrinating them, and have been for years, to get them so they don't even see anything any different. They don't know any different from what the world powers and the government have been, you know, deciding is the direction that we've got to go in. And you have written a book, I believe, sort of dealing with the public schools and the system and how indoctrination is affecting all our children. So maybe we should segue into that now.
Yeah, let's do that, Tony. And before we move to that, though, just a couple things on what you just said. You know, you just articulated what the Bible clearly teaches, that don't put your trust in princes, right? Your trust in the Lord. Don't trust in men, trust in the Lord. And we always need to remember that. And to your point, you know, while I think Donald Trump has done some very good things on the climate change front, a lot of people were hoping he would get us out of the United Nations. So the Secretary General of the UN, Antonio Guterres, sent out a letter in January, warning that the UN was on the brink of imminent financial collapse. Those were his words. And unfortunately, Donald Trump and the U.S. Congress, entirely controlled by Republicans, stepped in and saved the day. And they sent billions of dollars to the UN above and beyond what even the UN was demanding. And so a lot of people were quite disappointed in that. And I think rightfully so. The American people should not be financing this thing. And yet, thanks to Donald Trump and the Republican Congress, billions of additional dollars have now just gone as a lifeline to save the UN as it was getting close to destruction. So it's very unfortunate. And on the climate change in education issue, they'll tell you that's what they're doing, right? UNESCO, they had a whole bunch of events there. That's the UN Education Agency. And they would tell anybody who would listen, like, we're incorporating this into the international standards. Schools all over the world are implementing our curricula. And they understand that if they capture the hearts and minds of the next generation, they win. And so we did just release a new book. It's called Woke and Weaponized, How Karl Marx Won the Battle for American Education and How We Can Take It Back. And it includes a lot of this information. But we go back in time even further. I wrote this with Robert Bortons. He's the CEO of Classical Conversations. It's the largest classical Christian homeschool program in the world, with like 135,000 students, including in New Zealand and all over the world. And what we did, we started in chapter one with an in-depth dive into a guy called Robert Owen. He was the first guy in the modern era who seriously proposed that the government ought to be educating our children. And he claimed to be fighting what he described as the great trinity of evil, which he said was marriage and family. That was one element. Irrational systems of religion, in particular Christianity, was the next element. And then last but not least, private property, he said, needed to go. Women should be held in common. All property should be held by the commune. And, we should get rid of Christianity because it's silly. And so this is the guy who concluded that the government ought to be educating our children. He wrote a bunch of essays that were eventually picked up by the Prussian dictator and implemented in Prussia before being reimported back into the United States. And I think this will interest you, Tony. He admitted, and we only found this out right before we went to press with this book, so we just snuck it in at the last minute. He admitted, this guy Robert Owen, shortly before he died, that he was getting his ideas from spirits that he was communicating with through Ouija boards and through taps on the walls. And he was quite sure that there were spirits of dead people, and he goes into this big diatribe. He held a conference called Congress for the Advanced Minds of the World. And he lays out how all these ideas about social reform and where we should go as a human species, as a human race, were coming from these spiritual entities. And I'll just remind people, you can go all the way back to the Old Testament, Deuteronomy, Leviticus. God calls us an abomination. It was actually a capital offense in Old Testament Israel. God puts it in the same sentence as sacrificing your children to idols. And so this is the guy who came up with the idea that the government ought to be educating our children. And he's the one who laid the groundwork for eventually making that a reality. So
that is very interesting. Yeah. So it sounds very New Age and Madame Blavatsky and all of that type of same direction. So 100%. Yeah. So what's the name of the book that you've written?
It's called Woke and Weaponized, How Karl Marx Won the Battle for American Education and How We Can Take It Back.
So just where can people get that just before we continue?
It's available on Amazon. If people want to order it, a signed copy, they can get it through my website, libertysentinel.org. Just click on the little store button or the shop button and it'll take you there. But easiest place is going to be Amazon for sure.
Okay. So what is the gist of the direction of the book then? And what do you hope to achieve by having
Well, we tell the story of how we got into this mess, because we think it's really important for people to understand that this didn't happen organically. These weren't like Christian institutions that were somehow hijacked by bad guys. They were institutions that were built from the beginning, that were proposed from the beginning by people who hated God, by people who wanted to turn your children away from God and turn your children away from his word, and of course from their families and their country. And so we want to first of all expose that. And a big part of the book, and I'm really pleased with how that turned out, we focus on solutions, right? Because, yeah, we want people to know the problem, and there is a problem, but we also want people to have concrete steps that they can take to protect their own children and concrete steps that we can take as Christians and as a society to try to protect the next generation from this. And because there's been a lot of what I would consider to be false solutions offered by people who've been pointing out these problems. In fact, UNESCO, we were just talking about UNESCO, they proposed in 2022, they put out a global education monitoring report where they said that what we really needed was to bring all these non-state education providers under the control of the government, which is, of course, the worst possible idea. Yeah. And the mechanism that they proposed for doing that is we'll give them all free money. And once we give them free money, they mean tax money, or they're going to take your money and then give it back to you. Yeah. Then they can impose the curricula, they can impose the values, they can impose the admissions requirements, they can impose the testing requirements, which of course will govern what is taught. And so we warn people about these kind of false solutions. We show who's funding this. We actually commissioned some researchers to dig into the billionaires that are funding this movement. And some of the people would recognize George Soros, Mark Zuckerberg, Michael Bloomberg, the climate nut. Bill Gates is, of course, a huge financier in this space. And we show that the agenda is not to like liberate your children from bad government schools. The idea is to basically bring all education under the control of government. And unfortunately, nobody has really exposed this. So it's something unique that we've done. I didn't want to do it because unfortunately it brings us into conflict with people who we otherwise agree with on most things and we love dearly, but somebody had to do it because unfortunately we're sleepwalking right into a trap.
Yeah, well, yes, that sounds true. And I noticed some of those people that you mentioned, those names, those same people that have been tied up with Epstein. And you're like, oh, right, we can trust them, yeah.
That's exactly right. And, you know, Epstein is another one. I just wrapped up a couple of days ago a cover story for the New American Magazine about Jeffrey Epstein and the depths of depravity here. I've spent the last 3 weeks, some of my staff has spent weeks now working on this, just digging through these files. Some of it is so horrific. It's shameful to even speak of, as Ephesians 5:12 tells us. But essentially, I think this is the clearest window we've ever had, maybe other than the Bible, into how the world really runs. Like, you know, what is the deep state? How does it work? What do they do? Who's involved? What are the tactics? And, you know, a lot of people have focused on the child sex trafficking, which is monstrous. And I mean, all these people need to go to jail if we're feeling merciful for the rest of their lives. But there's another dark agenda that hasn't gotten much attention. And that is Jeffrey Epstein's obsession in the science realm. He was obsessed with transhumanism, with genetic engineering, with directed evolution, with modifying the DNA of babies. Apparently, he was trying to create a breeding program on his ranch in New Mexico. As you start digging into this, you realize that this is an agenda straight from the pit of hell. And these files give us a little window to see kind of the tip of the iceberg here. And I would encourage people, you know, don't be distracted by the other stuff in the news. Yes, Iran war, that's important. But like, let's not forget that we just got millions of pages of documents proving that the world is in fact run by, you know, for lack of a better term, Satan worshiping pedophiles. So.
And you notice how, it's now being distracted from that. Like the Epstein's out of the news now almost. And yeah, and the people are, nobody's getting arrested. I mean, nobody, apart from a couple of people in Britain, you know, the faces of things. But in America and beyond, you know, everyone's getting away scot-free, really. And it's so wrong, and yet it's so what you expect. If these people are controlling the world, you know, they throw out a narrative to kind of keep people happy for a wee while until it disappears and people forget about it and go on to something else, and then they still can carry on. And Epstein was just a scapegoat. Now, whether Epstein has even really died, I don't believe he committed suicide. He's either probably still alive somewhere and was, you know, replaced, or if he is dead, he was murdered to make things easier. But most of the people, I don't think Epstein was anywhere near the top of the pile. He was being used for other, you know, purposes. And so he was just that face of things. And so once that face is gone, it's like, oh, well, he's gone. We can't arrest him anymore. So let's move on. And it was all a hoax, you know.
A Democrat hoax, according to President Trump. Yeah. But you just made a really good point there that I think is worth emphasizing. Epstein was not the top of the pyramid here. In fact, he himself publicly said, I'm a representative of the Rothschilds. We've actually got the documents showing he was paid tens of millions of dollars by the Rothschilds. He was built up by David Rockefeller, who was added to the Trilateral Commission in 1990 by David Rockefeller. He was added to the board of directors at Rockefeller University. You know, he was very much like George Soros, very much like Cecil Rhodes, very much like a lot of these guys who appear to be leaders of the movement of evildoers. He was built up by people behind the scenes who were not supposed to talk about. Of course, he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. But we need to get our heads around this, I think, because it first of all, it confirms what Scripture teaches about the nature of reality and the world. Second of all, it demands action. You know, you live in New Zealand, we live in the United States. These are supposed to be self-governing countries. And if we are the government in these countries and there are people who are raping children and conducting horrific experiments, and the purpose of government is to punish evil, and we're allowing this evil to run wild. Like you said, nobody's really been arrested. Maxwell is in jail for 20 years. A handful of people in Europe, Torbjörn Jagland is under investigation, and a few others, Lord Mandelson and things, and Prince Andrew. But this is the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. And I think, frankly, a lot of people need to be in handcuffs. A lot of people need to be in hearings right now, being deposed under oath. And we cannot be distracted by this. Like, we have an obligation, I think, to first of all understand this. As the Apostle Paul says, we're not ignorant of Satan's devices. We get it. He's like a lion seeking whom he may devour. And in a country like the United States or in a country like New Zealand, we have, I think, an obligation to make sure that the criminals, the monsters responsible for these horrors, are held accountable.
But the problem is, if you have them on both sides. You have people in government, and it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican if you're in America, if you realise that how much of that flows through both parties, and who and names of presidents and former presidents appeared a lot in the Epstein files list. It's like, how can you beat that when these are the people that are actually the ones that are making the laws? And, you know, and
well, in the United States, we have a very decent. Well, in the United States, Tony, we're blessed to have a very decentralized system of government. So, you know, I don't know the specifics of how New Zealand works, but yes, we have a federal justice system, which has very limited jurisdiction, but the vast majority of crimes are prosecuted at the state and local level. Crimes like murder, I mean, that's a state law issue. That's not typically a federal issue. Crimes like child abuse, that's a state law issue, not a federal issue. And Epstein was flying all over the country, New Mexico, Florida, New York, Virgin Islands. You know, this guy was all over the place. There are sheriff's departments and police departments and district attorneys and state attorneys and state attorneys general all over this country whose offices have jurisdiction over Epstein and some of his co-conspirators. So I am not satisfied with the idea that, well, you know, people in Trump's administration are compromised and Pam Bondi wants to talk about the stock market. And so we just have to throw up our hands and say all these maniacs and monsters are going to go free. We need the people at the local and state level. If the federal government won't intervene here, then we need people at the local and the state level to take action. And there are probably hundreds of people who have jurisdiction to initiate investigations, to issue subpoenas, to bring people in for questioning, to search properties like that ranch in New Mexico that absolutely needs to be searched. And so I think Americans, you know, if you're in the United States and you're listening to me, you need to be pushing for this, especially if you live in Florida or New York or New Mexico or the Virgin Islands or any other place where Epstein was regularly perpetrating some of these crimes. We cannot say, well, you know, the government's corrupt, and so these guys are all just going to get away. No way. You know, we have children, we have obligations as citizens, and we must speak out and we must demand accountability.
I agree. The problem is if the people at state level are also implicated in it, then
or blackmailed or threatened.
Yeah, then it gets harder. But somehow something needs to. It shouldn't be allowed to just die a natural death and be swept away under the carpet. You know, there do need to be people that keep on hammering and hammering on this and keeps it in the public view. And, you know, at least some of these perpetrators are, you know, found and tried. But I just think the level of corruption goes so far and in so many countries. And you've got, you know, prime ministers of Israel too implicated in it and various other.
Barack is all over these files.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, that's right. And I think you mentioned a ranch in New Mexico. I think it was. I think that's the one. It was actually a New Zealand couple that was managing that ranch too. Wow. So it even is here.
Wow, it's amazing. And you know, Bill Richardson, the former governor of New Mexico, was apparently very close to Epstein. Is one of the names that pops up over and over again. And Alex Acosta, who was the U.S. prosecutor who oversaw the initial Epstein cases, was actually told, don't mess with Epstein. He's with intelligence. In other words, you know, this guy's above the law. Don't touch him. And in the records, in the memos, I've looked through them, they actually say, like, hey, here's some of the people who know about this. Bill Clinton, Bill Richardson, the former governor of New Mexico. So you're right. This goes deep. It has intersections with countries around the world. Like we've seen now, there's a whole bunch of Norwegians involved in this, including Norwegians who work for the UN, Norwegians who actually the former prime minister of Norway, Torbjørn Jagland, is now under investigation. They've actually lifted his diplomatic immunity at the Council of Europe. So I'm grateful for that. That's what needed to happen. But why is it that only Norway can criminally prosecute these people? Like, New Mexico, where are you? Florida, right? We've got a good governor here. Why is our attorney general not putting some of these people under the microscope? So we got to keep pushing.
This cannot just disappear. You mentioned Acosta. Well, I mean, he's now part of the current administration, Trump administration.
He was. Yep, he was. So. Yep. And there are other people in the Trump administration who are also mentioned. Howard Lutnick, who, of course, I don't remember if we talked about him on your show, but I've been sounding the alarm about Howard Lutnick since he joined the Trump campaign. This was a mega Clinton donor. This is a guy who was close to Jeffrey Epstein. This is a guy who lied about his relationship to Jeffrey Epstein. This is a guy who's been deeply involved in creating the architecture of the global prison planet that they're building, including on the climate front. So, you know, we've got to have full disclosure and full transparency here, and we've got to let the chips fall where they may. And if it's Republicans, they belong in jail. And if it's Democrats, they belong in jail. Party labels should not be a factor here. Anybody who is involved in criminal activity with this maniac belongs in jail. Again, if we're feeling very merciful as a society.
Yep. But then you have the really big money with Rothschilds and Rockefellers and all that. How do you get to the bottom of a pile like that? It seems to me that it's only the small fish that are ever likely to get prosecuted anyway, not the people that had the underlying puppet masters behind all of this.
Yeah. Well, and that's one reason why I think people really should be speaking out about this. The Rothschild name appears thousands of times in these documents. Yeah. We did a whole episode of my show Behind the Deep State on just the Rothschild connection. It is so deep, and it's way beyond just business, right? I mean, they're talking about like marriage problems and PR issues and intra-family squabbles. Epstein was literally telling people, like he wrote an email to Peter Thiel. He's like, hey, I'm a representative of the Rothschilds, as you probably know.
Yeah.
Les Wexner, who's the only person who's been officially identified as a co-conspirator other than Maxwell by the FBI, was being deposed just a couple weeks ago and said under oath that it was the Rothschilds who recommended Jeffrey Epstein to him. So somebody needs to call these Rothschilds in for questioning and put them under oath and find out what's going on here. And you know what? I'm even okay with prosecutors saying, like, look, we'll make deals with some of the lower level minions. Like, you tell us what you know and we'll give you immunity. Elon Musk suggested doing that for some of the victims, because one of the things these evil gangs do is they get the victims to participate in some of the crimes, because then they know that the victims will never be able to speak out. As Elon Musk said, it's better than the best NDA, non-disclosure agreement. And so I'm fine with the Department of Justice or a state attorney's office offering immunity from prosecution for people who give useful intelligence, useful information that can be used to prosecute people higher up. But the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, I think, are two of the names that must be investigated based on what we know already.
Well, you mentioned Elon Musk, and I mean, he's in there as well. So, and his excuse was, oh, I didn't know when I was asking about his wild parties that they were really like that. I mean, come on. Yep. Musk is just as implicated as anyone else. And Peter Thiel, he's a guy with Palantir and the intelligence that's probably being used for the Iran war. It's like, are they going to prosecute him? I don't think so. You know, this is why it's just the tentacles go everywhere.
They do. And I think that's one of the things that they were counting on, right? If everybody's involved, if we've got pictures of everybody doing horrible things to children that they shouldn't be doing, then, hey, it becomes very difficult for anybody to be prosecuted. But, Trump has said, like, we need to move on. And, I don't think his base is going to go for that. He's publicly said he thinks he could go out and shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and his supporters would keep loving him. And maybe that's true for some. But when you're talking about the systematic rape and exploitation and trafficking of children, I don't think that's something even the most diehard Trump supporters are going to overlook or forget about. And we've seen this with people who are close to him saying, like, you cannot sweep this under the rug. You must do something. So
he's potentially implicated as well. So it's in Trump's interest to sweep it under the carpet too, because he's not going to come out squeaky clean out of this either.
And the NPR, which, by the way, is not a credible source, it's a government-funded propaganda, has been for a long time, but they did what seemed like a credible report about some of the files being withheld that apparently mentioned Donald Trump in them. So we've got to have full disclosure. The law that was passed mandated full disclosure. They were authorized to redact the names of the victims, and that's it. Instead, they've redacted the names of the perpetrators, and they've actually put a lot of the names of the victims in there. They've put naked photos of the victims out there and had to take them down. So we've got to go back and we got to say, nope, you cannot be redacting all these names. You cannot be holding back files because they might implicate somebody that is inconvenient. I would urge Americans especially, and if there's a nexus with your country, you too, we must keep advocating for this. And I'm grateful for the folks in Congress that are doing something about this. Representative Thomas Massey, Representative Ana Paulina Luna, Representative Tim Burchett. There's quite a few in Congress that are doing the right thing here, but we need more. And I think the key is the public has to speak out and demand it, because if we just get distracted, oh, there's a war in Iran now, or oh, there's a terrorist attack over here, we all forget about it, then they'll be able to just sweep this under the rug.
Yeah, very true. Okay, so once again, just before we close off, you know, your book, and for people finding it, you can tell people again where your website is and where they find your book. But is there anything else with that book that you want to mention to people to encourage them as to why they should look at getting it?
Well, for me, the big thing is I want parents to understand how dangerous this system is for the hearts and the minds and the souls of their children. So, you know, we do spend a whole chapter looking at what education looked like before the government took it over. And I think people will be astounded at how well-educated people across the Western world, and in particular the Anglo-Saxon world, were before the government got involved here. And there's a lot of good action items that we can all take to protect at least our own loved ones. So, you know, whether people get the book or not, you know, that's not the important thing. The really important thing is for parents. If you're a Christian, if you believe the word of God, go read it. God's word is filled with instructions on the raising and the educating and the discipling of your children. The system that exists right now, not just in the United States, but around the world, is not compatible with what the word of God teaches about how Christians are to raise their children. And so I would just urge people in the strongest possible terms to be in prayer about this. You know, my wife and I, we homeschool, and we wouldn't trade it for the world. We homeschool our six. And I understand not everybody feels called to do that. I get it. We use a great program called Classical Conversations. I'm on the board of a classical Christian school called Freedom Project Academy. It's a great program as well. So there's a lot of really good options for people who want something else. But I don't think the system that exists is compatible with what the Word of God says. And I think if people do the research or read the book, they'll see that very, very clearly.
Awesome. Okay. So once more, your website?
LibertySentinel.org. And people can get the book there. It's called Woke and Weaponized. And they can sign up for our free newsletter there. It's also available on Amazon and every other place. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being with me on the show again today, Alex. A fascinating discussion, and I really hope people will like this video and share it, because there's a lot of information in here I think people need to hear. So thanks for being with me again today.
Thank you, Tony. God bless you. Really appreciate it.
Bless you too. Cheers. Folks, also, like I said, please make sure that you like this video and share it. And also, please subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com as well, our website. And remember that we do run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations. If you're able to help us, that's always greatly appreciated. We definitely can't really continue without people helping us, so any help given through donatings is always appreciated. And the music used is written, played, and recorded by me, and I have free music on our website of mine as well, so you can donate there or you can download our free music and so on. But please subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com. God bless, and God willing, we'll be back with another episode in a few days' time.